The following is a Hoop Ball presentation.
Plays it into Trey. 2 seconds wide. Trey Slaughter.
Back to Hoop Ball Hawks, the show here on the Hoop Ball Network that is taking flight. We cover everything regarding the Atlanta Hawks. I'm your host, Brad Harden, recording live from Atlanta, Georgia, sunny Atlanta, Georgia. And I'm recording this on Tuesday, June 15th, after a huge 18-point comeback to extend the series for the Atlanta Hawks. It's now tied at 2 apiece with the Philadelphia 76ers. And after last episode where I was in the pulpit preaching about that shameful, shameful performance that the Hawks put on Friday night. And I'm admit, there were some moments last night where I didn't know. I didn't know if they were going to pull it out. But thankfully, the Hawks pulled it out. Definitely thanks to some luck reversal in that game starting into the third quarter. Obviously, through the end of the game, we're going to talk about last night's game, a preview of Game 5 with a special, special guest. After this, plug for my bookie.
If you like losing money, turn this off right now. But if you love free bands, just like Super Future, then keep listening. Sports betting is getting huge across the nation, and all of my homies love to bet on games. There are a bunch of sites out there for sports betting, but all of my homies love my bookie. Why? Because it's so easy to use. And since y'all my homies too, I'ma plug you. All my homies listening right now can sign up for MyBookie with the promo code HOOPBALL to unlock a 100% deposit match bonus. 100%, just like an A+ in school. Hopefully you got them, but if not, this your chance to get 100%. You like playing blackjack? There are some very fun and free blackjack tournaments, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. There is so much that you can do on MyBookie, and the best thing is that no cash is required to enter, and you can win up to $100 in daily challenges and up to $1,000 in weekly tournaments. So you want a chance at free cash money? Then again, my homies, sign up with the promo code HOOPBALL to unlock a 100% deposit match bonus and try to score some, in the words of Future, like I said earlier, free band.
All right, and we are back. And as I said, we have a special guest, my friend, local celebrity. You saw him on TV. We're going to talk about that in a minute. My man, Alan Strokey. Alan, what is going on, my brother?
Well, local celebrity is probably a bit strong, but I, you know, it's the mantle that I have been given, so I will roll with it for now. I'm doing well, Brad. I hope you are doing well yourself on this fine Tuesday evening. And obviously, yeah, I mean, I'm in great spirits. The Hawks are very much alive. We are in a 3-game series, folks. It is crunch time. It's so exciting to see that win from them last night, the heart that they showed. You know, there's a lot of room for optimism looking forward to these next couple of games.
Yes, and it was definitely night and day between the different halves last night, and night and day from Game 3 to Game 4. And as I mentioned, local celebrity. Alan, we saw you Game 3 on ESPN. Yeah. It looks like with your father, it looked like a wonderful moment to be there, but it wasn't a wonderful moment for the Hawks. As I said before, it was a shameful performance on Friday night. And I would like to just briefly get your take on Game 3 on Friday.
Well, the man that was on screen with me, my dad was a little peeved because he was actually cut out. He was to my right. The guy to my left, he was going off about the refs. Well, let's just say favorable whistle to Joel Embiid and the Sixers in that moment. My face of disgust in that moment had to do with, just to be frank here, Joel Embiid flopping pretty flagrantly, as he's done many times this series. And I won't hear anything of it from Sixers fans complaining about Trey's foul calls, because check your man. of all people, this dude has shown himself to be in that category. That being said, I was incredibly, you know, excited and fortunate to have been able to have attended game three. It was the first time I've ever been to any playoff game. Unfortunately, it wasn't a memorable experience for, I mean, it was obviously, but not for the reasons I would have hoped, that it was a worse loss to the playoffs. And, you know, game three just kind of showed where, game three was sort of the culmination of everything that Philly figured out against us in the previous two games, including game one where we won, where Philly went on that run to almost take it from us in that game there. And Nate McMillan only had a couple of cards left in his deck to play as a response as far as adjustments go, I think, and he played both of them last night with Kevin Huerter joining the starters in the thinning of the rotation. Like, you and I, before the playoffs started, you and I were having this conversation. What does this roster look like? Who's going to be getting all those minutes when inevitably playoff crunch time kicks in and you got to cut down to size? Like, who are your best guys? And we saw really a seven-man rotation featuring our starters plus Kevin Huerter and then Lou Williams, Danilo Gallinari, and some really nice Onyeka Okongwu minutes last night. We should give him some props. Let's just get that out of the way.
Absolutely.
He was great.
Yeah. And shout out Greg for Hoopball Bulls. We had an offline conversation today. First off, if you're a Bulls fan, check out his latest podcast. He's been off the grid, but now he's back. We had an offline conversation about Onyeka Okongwu and how he's really been showing up. And we need to give him more of his flowers because, last night he played 6 minutes, but those were really, you know, very impactful minutes there with 4 points and 3 rebounds. And he was just playing with energy, effort, especially on the defensive end. So I'm glad you brought him up because I didn't know if he was going to actually be brought up in this program. But yes, 100%.
Probably not the guy who gets the headline billing from game four. But I mean, you and I were on the Okongwu train once he got drafted, when you and I hopped on that pod long ago. And it's cool seeing him show up. Like, frankly, I mean, he was kind of the first guy to set a tone defensively in that game. He really was.
Yes, he was. Yes. Yeah, because at that point, and one of the biggest things that I talked about in the previous episodes is that our bigs cannot get in foul trouble. Obviously, having that, you know, mammoth of a man who flops that we talked about in Joel Embiid. But between them, John Collins had 3 fouls last night. Capella had 3 fouls, which are both below what they normally get, especially in this series. And Onyeka Okongwu only had 1 foul last night, obviously in 6 minutes. But if you can keep the front court of the Hawks underneath 9 fouls, it's probably going to lend to the Hawks winning, because the problem was when you get Capella, when you get Collins in foul trouble, you're forcing Okongwu to play extended minutes. And he's still a rookie, even though he's been coming along. He's still a rookie, and then you force Bruno Fernando out there. You're forcing Gallinari to play defense, which is not his forte at all. And just like it happened in Game 3, when you have those players in foul trouble, you're putting out bad defensive lineups, and it's just a recipe of disaster for a team in Philly who's looking at Gallinari and licking their chops at, okay, that's a barbecue chicken. That's barbecue chicken right there, because, you know, they're not known as defenders. And it was great to see them not getting foul trouble last night, unlike we saw in Game 3.
Yeah, no, I think when we talk about just the biggest differences between the first half of Game 4 and the second half of Game 4, and y'all, this is the type of game where, you know, you got to bust out the book of cliches. I'm sorry, you have to do it. This was just one of those. Thank you. Yes, blowing the dust off.
Yeah. But blow the dust off the book right there.
But just get it going here. Like, this was a heart win. This was a win filled with energy, intensive effort, backs against the wall. The Hawks really, they didn't back down when they needed to be resilient. And there's no better way to. You can see the differences in how they played in the first and second half. Really, let's talk about the defense, like in that first quarter and how it changed. Philadelphia was getting to the rim with ease. Tobias Harris, which, you know, He's done this multiple times in the series now. He went on a run himself, getting to the bucket, going down the hill, and he, I think he had 10 points in the first quarter. Couldn't stop him. None of our defenders were able to stay in front of him. They weren't fouling. Maybe because of all the issues that they ran into in game three, they were a little hesitant. Mm-hmm. But they weren't, you know, there was no real aggression. Philly got anything that they wanted in that quarter. The bulk of their 12-point lead was built off of them just getting it to the rim. But then you fast forward to the second half, and I don't think the game plan really all changed all that much, but what did was just the effort defensively. Kevin Huerter, yeah. Gallinari, John Collins, those guys did not get beat by their man. They consistently stayed in front of, you know, like Harris in that second half, you think he only had 6 points, two of which were at the rim. So like they really limited his ability to get downhill. And you can see it too, where Capella was way more locked in as a help defender. Trey was doing some stuff off ball that, you know, sometimes gambling a little bit with those double teams. Sometimes they worked, sometimes they didn't. But I think that the team just played more cohesively. They all played within their roles. And you could tell that they had more energy in that fourth quarter than Philly did at that point, at that juncture of the game. And they really willed themselves to a tied series here. That's just no other, you know, there's plenty of X's and O's to get into, but story of the game was these guys showed resiliency in a way that a young team, you know, were not accustomed to.
Yeah, and we've seen it time and time in the regular season with all the adversity they had to go through to show that fight and resilience in a lot of games where they were down and it came back to win. And it was something that we did not see in game three. And then I was, like I said, when I was in my soapbox in game or on the last episode talking about game three, that was the most disappointing, is that the fight, that grit, it wasn't there, but it showed up last night in a big way. And on top of obviously Philly getting cold at the right time, I mean, when you're Embiid and you're 0-for-12 in the second half, that's a gift. That is an absolute gift. And when you talked about Tobias Harris, who we said was the X factor in this series, being limited in the second half, that is a gift. Ben Simmons didn't go on a crazy run like he did in game three. That's a gift. Mm-hmm. And outside of that, outside of, you know, Korkmaz, who's been pretty big this series, getting 10 points, no one else on Philadelphia scored in double digits last night. And those are just gifts. Those are absolute gifts when you're looking at Philadelphia. It was just a luck reversal. They got cold at the time where the Hawks got hot. And we would be remiss if we didn't talk about, you know, the energizer bunny for the Hawks last night, and that was John Collins. John Collins with his dunks, those were energy plays, momentum shifting plays that he was making. It was like, oh, you're not going to box out John Collins? Okay, let me go ahead and get this put back and yam it on the back of your neck. That was so many times where that happened when we were watching at our various establishments that we were at last night, really enjoying the game and watering holes, yeah. When it happened, you saw the room just light up from John Collins. And it wasn't a crazy night from him. Like, he kept his fouls down, which is great. Absolutely great. That I can stop right there. But 14-12 last night, 6-15 from the floor, 1-3 from three. And that big three, that 1-3 he made was probably one of the biggest shots of the game, in my opinion.
One of the biggest shots of his career.
I wouldn't disagree with that either. One of the biggest shots of his career, young career. And we talked about this before we got into the program. I've been, you know, hesitant as far as, you know, I said John Collins is going to get max contract money because of the market this year. Did I think he deserved it? I didn't think so with his play this year. But there was a lot of other factors. He did get better defensively. His numbers were pretty much kind of the same as far as from the three. He may have taken a step back offensively with the emergence of DeAndre Hunter. You know, you have Bogey, other people. So his role was kind of in limbo. But in moments this year, he has shown up. He proves that he's a guy that we need to re-sign. And I'm not sure what is going to happen this offseason. And I know me and you were in agreement on this, but I think he earned us saying, hey, you know what, John, we'll work with you. What do you want? How much you want? And let's see if we can make it happen.
Well, let's have the bit. This is time for the big John Collins conversation, because at this point in the series, tied 2-2, he's the Hawks' most important player for winning it. Yes. I think we have enough evidence at this point to say that John Collins has the ability to be this series' X factor for Atlanta. He, like, you know, the energy plays, the putback dunks, the lob opportunities, like, he got us going, got the crowd going, and that helps build momentum in that way. And yeah, it wasn't, you know, his shot's still pretty wayward, but the fact of the matter is, in that second half, he was playing with aggression, especially on the glass, where we really desperately need him in this series, because
yes,
games two and three, I don't think I'm speaking out of turn to say that Collins just looked a little passive out there. You know, I think that the Philly's kind of gotten to him and kind of got him out of his rhythm. He's the outside shot has really abandoned him. That's part of why that three he hit last night was so huge, because I can't really, it's been a while since I've seen him hit one. And we know how good of a shooter he is. I think he needs to have this mindset, this attack mindset the rest of the way, because Philly, if he is someone that Philly has to guard earnestly, they have run out of options to contain all of our weapons. Then, you know, when Thybulle's out there and Simmons are out there, you know, Simmons can kind of float around while Thybulle's on Trey. Like, you can see Simmons on Bogey and Herter sometimes. And we've seen him on Collins too, when Collins has kind of got a little momentum going. And if he draws that kind of attention, we have two creators in Capella and Bogey. Oh, sorry, not Capella. No, in Herter and Bogey, who can really get going, get Capella going. Like, Philly just won't have personnel to contain us if Collins is constantly forcing it. No, well, not forcing it, being aggressive and forcing the issue. Like, don't be passive here. And yeah, we got to re-sign him. And I don't really care about the money, because I think it's immaterial. It's out of our hands. The market is going to dictate that he's a max contract player. He's a max contract player. That's not necessarily, you know, we don't really have an option here. He's going to be a restricted free agent. People are going to be sending him offer sheets to try and pry him away. And I don't think Atlanta can afford to lose a guy with his skill set. You're not going to be able to replace him. I don't really know. I mean, I think it'd be foolish, because he has shown us when he's at his best, he makes this team too dynamic to guard. That's the fact of the matter. The spacing that he provides with his size, he's a perfect complement to the guys we have on this roster, and he really can. Like, the series is up in the air. I know Philly's probably still favored. They have home court. It's not over. It's not decided. And John Collins can be a big part of the equation in figuring out which way it's going to go, depending on his next three games.
And I wholeheartedly agree, because he kind of is the energizer bunny for this team. I know in spurts throughout the year when Collins wasn't as aggressive, Capella has taken that role. And Capella had a good game himself last mm-hmm. night. 12 points, 13 rebounds, 6-9 from the floor. And he had three fouls, which is great, because they're both not in that 4-5 foul range where you have to sit them for extended periods of time. Because when you look at the minutes, John Collins and Capella both played 35-plus minutes last night. That is a win. That is a win. If we can get 32, 33-plus minutes out of them because they're not in foul trouble, that is a win, and that's an advantage for the Atlanta Hawks. And when you speak to the aggression that of John Collins, we need that, because, like I said, and a lot of times he is the emotional leader on the floor. When he makes those plays, those, you know, second chance points, and when you're looking at the stats as far as offensive rebounds, we won the offensive rebounding margin +4 last night. And we lost the overall rebounding margin, but the rebounds from Collins and from Capella are crucial. I mean, to only lose the rebound margin by 6 to Philadelphia with those trees they got on that team is an absolute win. That's an absolute win, and that's a big part to John Collins and Capella, you know, making an effort to crash the glass. We need them to crash the glass. It has to be a team effort because we know, you know, what Philly can do, but it really starts with Capella and Collins, and they were, you know, invaluable last night, and you're right. We have to figure out how to keep John Collins here for the future, and the rest will figure itself out as far as, you know, because – And before we go any further, I want to say shout out real quick to Andrew Hill at Drew Hill on 29 on Twitter. He shouted me out for covering the team, staying true to Atlanta hashtag. And admittedly, like I said, I just joined this train, you know, as I was tasked to cover this team in August. And from August to now, I've really, you know, been I really appreciate being welcomed here as a transplant to Atlanta, as a Saints fan. Who that? I know you guys are Falcons fans.
Why'd you have to ruin a nice moment like that?
Hey, you know I'm a stand. You know I'm a stand on my team. And if my DMs and my mentions are open, if you want to talk about the Saints, if you want to talk about Jameis Winston and Taysom Hill debacle, and I'm gonna sit here and tell you Jameis Winston's gonna be a starting quarterback, you can enter my DMs. We can have a conversation. But to get back to the program at hand, it's been great covering this team to this point, and I did see a lot of potential as I was, you know, tasked with covering this team, and we watching film, looking at the numbers last year, seeing the free agent acquisitions and the draft. I saw something in this team, and now they've exceeded mine and a lot of people's expectations, and it's only the beginning phase of this building process. If you, and like I said, Glenn Willis, who I talked about program before, said like Philadelphia's done this for years. It's been like year five, year six of this process. We're basically in year three of this process with the first time having a team that's competitive. And we're kind of on the ground floor. We have, you know, the sky's the limit with this team, depending on what direction this team goes. So I appreciate the recognition, Andrew Hill. Follow him at Drew Hill 29. I really do appreciate that. But back to, you know, talking about the game last night. We haven't talked about Trey yet. Trey, 25 points.
Seems important. Yeah, we should probably get there.
Very important. 25 points, 18 assists last night, which is the most assists in a playoff game by any player wearing a Hawks jersey in history. And he's the youngest player to ever have 20 and 15 in a playoff game since Chris Paul, which is obviously point guard.
Interesting name to come up at this time.
Yeah, very interesting, especially what he's doing on the other side of the conference for the Phoenix Suns, sweeping the Denver Nuggets, who are probably the fast food line getting chicken nuggets right now. But Trey, even with that bum shoulder last night, he didn't shoot the ball great. 25 points.
How concerned were you when you saw him on the sidelines with the like 13-ton looking bandages on his shoulder out of nowhere? Did your heart drop like mine did?
Oh, I was about to crap a brick. Like, I can't say the right word for this program, but I was about to crap a brick when I saw that. Because I got to, you know, the watering hole to watch the game, and he was wrapped up on the sideline. I was like, what the hell is going on? Like, what happened? I was scared. Oh, Lord. But then when he came back, I can imagine how the arena felt. But when I was in the watering hole, just the excitement. When Trae Young came back on the court, I was like, okay, like he's coming back. Everyone's happy. And then once he hit that first floater, and then he hit those a couple three pointers in the first half, I knew he was all right. Like I said, he didn't shoot extremely efficient from the field, 8 for 26 from the field, 3 of 11 from three. But the 18 assists, getting his teammates involved, that was the big thing that I saw from Trae Young last night. That leadership. Deferring and you can remind me in the second half. Remember the moment where Trey had the ball and he could have taken a three and he kicked it out to was it to Gallo and he hit that three.
Well, are you referring to the play where they're kind of in transition? I think it was Herter who like initiated it, and he and Trey were on the break. He hit it. He kicked it out to Trey, and then Trey quickly got back to him. Was that the one you're referring to?
Yes, like he kicked it out, and then it was like a moment where normally Trae Young would have shot that shot, but he recognized that, you know what, tonight is my night. He kicked it out to a teammate, and they made the shot, and it was just a big moment, in my opinion, as to his maturation as a distributor of the ball and, you know, a game manager leading this team, you know, at the point guard position. And when I saw that moment, I was like, okay, Trey. I mean, because we know about his floaters. We know about, you know, his, like Stephen A. Smith, his cat quickness that he likes to say on the show. But those little things, the maturation in his game, when his shot wasn't falling, to get his teammates involved. And I talked about in the last program, 15 team assists for the Hawks last game, which was the lowest total probably of the entire season. For you, Trae Young, obviously it's something that they addressed as a team. Because they had 24 team assists last night compared to 15 in game three. For him alone to have 18 and surpass the total from game three means that he took the onus on himself to get everybody else involved, because he said it can't just be me. Like, yes, he's had the 30-point games here in the playoffs, and, you know, he's arrived and everything, but he can't do it alone. And to have those 18 assists that led to 22 points for Bogey, who I talk about in this program, where Bogey hits three three-pointers or more, they normally win. He had four last night. Surprise, surprise, the Hawks win. So you have 22 from Bogey, 14 from Collins, 12 from Capella, 10 from Herter. It was balanced. It was balanced last night. And that is a tribute to Trey moving that ball around and the team moving the ball around more to get them better looks. Now, although they didn't shoot great from the field, for them to shoot 36.6% from the field and 30% from three in comparison to Philadelphia, who shot 43.5% from the floor and 40% from three, to beat them. A lot of, like, and I said on Twitter, a lot of people are going to talk about Philly collapsing, and they did. But we cannot dismiss the grit, the fight, and obviously the maturation of the young players on this team to really go out and get and steal this game. Philadelphia should have won this game. Is that a stretch for me to say? Philadelphia should have won this game, in my opinion, when you look at the numbers.
Yes and no. Because they should have won this game because Joel Embiid going 0-for-12 is an anomaly that will never happen again in the half. In that half, had he hit two of those shots, well, I mean, I'm not trying to be like, you know, that's a completely different situation. But I think that the Hawks, yeah, Philly kind of collapsed. But at the same time, I think Atlanta needs to be given credit for how they sort of how they're picking their defense up to the point where they forced Philly to be a jump shooting team in that fourth quarter. Because that's all that's where all their looks were coming from. That's why they went cold, because they're just kind of forced. Stuck out of the perimeter, they just couldn't get anything going. And, you know, which is kind of weird too. I mean, we should talk about the Embiid part of this. I mean, we can say that maybe for the game five preview, but there's clearly something a little off there.
Yeah, it's something off. And I want to, you know, get back to your point as far as forcing them to be jump shooting team in the second half. Yeah. I 100% agree with that. And something else that I saw was that the Hawks took a little bit more pride at defending the rim. There was a lot of moments in game two and game three where Philadelphia was getting anything they wanted in the paint, especially Dwight Howard. He was just getting dunks, and, you know, Embiid was getting, you know, all he wanted in the paint. Simmons, Tobias, they were getting to the paint and getting everything they wanted. And I really, that was a big difference to me in the second half, was they really, like you said, they tightened up their overall defense all across the board, and it took everyone. And as much as, you know, like I said, I mentioned the Philly collapse because I know that's what people are going to talk about. That's what the people in the national landscape are going to talk about. But you're 100% correct. We cannot discredit the Hawks' fight, grit, energy on the defensive end, which led to them on the offensive end doing what they had to do. And, I mean, we can't go on without saying four turnovers the whole game. Turnovers compared to 12. That is absolutely incredible from the Hawks. It's just, especially when we saw 18 in one game. I think that was game two. They had 18, 11 in game three, and now you have four, which I'm not going to – spoiler alert, I don't think we're going to have four turnovers in game five. I think Philly's going to make some adjustments. But to do what we had to do last night was fantastic. We actually outscored Philadelphia in the paint last night 40-34 as well. So there's little things there when you don't shoot the ball well from the floor and you still win. That is, you know, inward. That is something that you can't measure. That's something you can't see on the stats. Like you said, heart, grit, and that is something that this team has developed throughout the season. So I wasn't surprised, even though I was a little nervous at times last night, and I damn sure was, and when they ran that play, and then B looked like he was going to have an open layup with about 7.7 seconds left, and he just point blank missed it. And maybe this is an opportunity. We keep bringing him up. We might as well talk about Embiid going into game five, because he's questionable.
Could I circle back real quick before we get there? Because I want to touch on one last thing that when we were talking about Trey, the facilitating. Mm-hmm. And I think that, I mean, first of all, can't give enough plaudits. This is like Trae Young and his ability to just be this level of floor general at this stage of his career, just as young as he still is absolutely got to that puts Hawks fans to sleep restfully every night. They will not have to be up worrying about the future of their team because this is generational stuff that we're seeing from Trae Young. Most people assume that he's just a three-point bomber. That's kind of what he's known for. Far and away, the best part of his game is his facilitating. And I really like, and I think it was what happened tonight was very much intentional, or last night was very intentional and by design. I think the coaching staff wanted Trae to primarily focus on facilitating. And I mean, take a look at how they cut their rotation down. But like, you have Bogey, you have Kevin Huerter, John Collins, Danilo Gallinari, Lou Williams. Those guys, along with Capella and Trae, played pretty much all the minutes in this game. What do they all have in common? You can't leave them open. They are shooters, and they will get their look. If you give them looks, they'll make you pay. And like I was saying in the John Collins conversation that we had, where Philly really runs out of options to defend him, especially now without Danny Green, who, you know, people have kind of glossed over his absence and have written him off defensively too because how Trae cooked him up in game one. He's still better than Korkmaz out there. He's still better than Seth Curry. Mm-hmm. Philly is loose on options to defend the perimeter. And if Trae is getting all of his guys going, even if he's got three of them going, that opens so like Philly's got problems that they don't have the personnel to address. So I really think that the coaching staff, the way that they orient, like, you know, like Lou Williams was a spot up shooter in that fourth quarter. I mean, the man's been taking it off the dribble pretty much all the time. But in that fourth quarter, he was just getting his looks. He was cooking them. And I think he had 6 or 7 points in that fourth quarter run to tie the game back up. He was just, I think that the everyone was used really effectively last night. Trae Young is the engine of this team with his passing. And I really think that the game plan going forward is just to continue this balanced attack, just firing from all sides and make some of these weaker Philly defenders step up because now they're kind of dealing with two sieves at all times.
Yes. Yeah, I 100% agree. Trae Young needs to continue to facilitate. It needs to be a spread attack. That's where ball movement is key. And as we talked about the team assist, and, you know, the comparison from game three to game four, lend to, you know, that spread attack that made it, you know, that stressed that Philadelphia defense. And that's what we're going to have to continue to do. And I already said 3-point shooting. We won with 30% 3-point shooting. We were 12 of 40 from the 3-point line last night. We need to continue to shoot well from the 3-point line and get clean looks. We hit some timely threes last night, but we need to hit more of them, in my opinion, and continue to crash the glass as a team. Those are the main things, as well as obviously energy, hustle, effort. Those things, you have to bring that every game. You're a professional, you're an NBA player, you want to win, you got to bring those every game. But those key stats, we have to take advantage of, and we have to obviously, and I hate to say this, take advantage of whatever situation as far as, you know, status of Joel Embiid's health is going into game five. It's one less day of rest. He clearly did not look well in the second half. And you said it was after like the 4-minute mark in the third quarter. You saw something a little different. I couldn't remember when as far as time, but he did look visibly hobbled in that second half. And I never want to see someone hurt because obviously lends to excuses and say, oh, well, you didn't beat him full strength. And starts other conversations from there that, you know, we don't really want to get into. But if you're the Hawks, you're going to have to continue to attack. Attack that John Collins attack, that Trae Young attack, that spread out attack that we keep alluding to. We're going to have to attack those weak defenders. We're going to have to attack Joel Embiid. We cannot be afraid of this team. In that second half, when the Hawks were ready to fight last night, they weren't afraid. That was a team that wasn't afraid. That was a team that was not overthinking their opportunities like in game three. I saw them physically, I saw them thinking on Friday night. I didn't see them thinking last night. I saw them playing, reacting to what they were given, and being the aggressors. Another thing that I said in the last program, Alan, was at no point were the Hawks the aggressors in game three. At no point did they have control of the game. And we saw it yesterday. Second half, they were the aggressors. Second half, they had control of the game. Even though Philly had some counter punches, and that's just going to happen. It's going to happen. Counter punches happen. We saw a lot of counter punches with runs that Philly made in the first half of game four. But to continue to fight with your back against the wall, that is something that I'm just proud of this team. Proud of this team, especially after what we saw from game three. And we're going to see what happens game five. with, you know, Trae Young is probable with his shoulder right now. Joel Embiid is questionable. And I still wish we had Cam Reddish. I wish there was some way Cam Reddish could be on the floor.
Well, I mean, you know, he's ramping up. The last I read, I think he was involved in 3-on-3s and 4-on-4s. He hasn't quite gotten to 5-on-5s yet. Still can't really imagine him getting involved in this series at the juncture that we're at now. I mean, maybe it's a different story if we get to the next round and we have, you know, I mean, not to get too ahead of ourselves, but I wish he was there, and I really wish DeAndre Hunter was here, because talk about an option for that spread attack and that primary defender on Tobias Harris. I mean, he would solve – I mean, Philly would really be in the doghouse right now if he was involved in the series. And, yeah, I mean, the Embiid thing is going to be – I mean, again, because, like, I think we've given plenty of credit to the Hawks and how their game plan for Game 4 contributed to that win. So I'm not taking anything away from that, but we do just got to be real here. Embiid's health, his status is everything for this series now. I don't know if he did injure himself on any one play, but it was undeniable in that fourth quarter. He was afraid to get down low. He was floating around the perimeter the majority of that game. It was part of why it was so easy to kind of force Philly into just taking jumpers all the time. Yeah. And if he's just coming back into Game 5, and he looks like he's still kind of a half step below, I don't really know what Philly does, like, to consistently, like, you know, I mean, he's the unguardable option in this series when he's at full health. There's no one on the Hawks. There's no one really in the NBA that can stop a fully healthy Embiid. We know he's not there, and it seems like it's getting worse. And like you said, I don't root for injuries. I think you gotta evaluate some things if you're like legitimately rooting for dudes to get hurt, especially like when we're witnessing greatness with some of these young stars. Like I never want that, and I would do want this Hawks team to win on merit. I just, you know, I don't. I really just hope that he is able to be productive in that game to the point where he's not hurting himself, but also I would like a win. It would be nice to win Game 5, and another 0-for-12er would be okay with me.
It will be an early Christmas gift, and Christmas does come in July for some people. But if Embiid is hobbled in any way, and Stephen A. Smith keeps saying it, Tobias Harris is going to have to step up, and that's someone who I said that is the X factor for Philadelphia. We're going to have to continue to limit Tobias Harris, because he can drive and get to his spots and knock his jumpers down and get to the obviously shoot. He can score from all three levels, and he's going to have to take a bigger role. So we're going to have to be ready for that. And that is on John Collins and others playing the forward position to be ready for that. Ben Simmons is going to have to step up. I don't know how many points he's been averaging per game, but it's, I think Ben Simmons is kind of, if it wasn't for Embiid and obviously Philadelphia having the first round series they had, and obviously it being a 2-2 series, I think more people would be talking about Ben Simmons just really kind of holding this Philadelphia team back. Yes, he can guard multiple positions. He's a great facilitator, and when he is in transition or getting to the cup, he's virtually unstoppable at times. But his lack of a jump shot, I think more people would be talking about that if this was a series where if it was a 3-1 instead of 2-2 in favor of Atlanta, something like that. I think that'd be more something. So he's going to have to definitely step up. And we already seen what, you know, Seth Curry with his jump shots and Korkmaz. They've had the players off the bench, the role players stepping up for them. So I think definitely going into Game 5, we need to prepare as if Embiid's going to be there. We need to continue to just fight, play hard on the defensive end, play with effort, read your keys, trust whatever they're giving you and whatever you prepared for, go out and attack, no matter if Embiid is out there on the floor. And if he happens to not be on the floor, you do the same thing and you shut down Tobias Harris, because if Tobias Harris isn't getting 20-plus points, the Hawks will win the game. The Hawks will win the game. And if you can keep the bigs out of foul trouble, the Hawks will win the game. If Bogey's hitting more than 3 3-pointers, the Hawks will most likely win the game. So there's a lot of little things, but it's really hinged on this injury report But like I said, you know what? Nate McMillan and the team, just go out there and play. You don't care who's out there. That fearlessness that we saw at the end of the second half of game four, bring that same fearlessness when you go back up there to Wells Fargo Arena in Philadelphia in front of that Rutgers crowd, and you show them, you know what? Hey, we took game four. Philly collapsed. But we fought to win that game. We're going to fight again because the best case scenario, hey, Atlanta, you're going to get another home game. You're going to get another home game in the State Farm Arena. You missed out on this opportunity game three, game four to come see this team. I mean, you didn't miss much in game three, in my opinion. But if you missed that,
confirm.
Yeah, Allen can confirm he was there in the stands. But if you missed game four, hey, you have an opportunity game six, depending on obviously if we're, you know, down 3-2 or up 3-2, to watch a playoff basketball game. And I know, Alan, that was your first playoff basketball game. I remember going to my first NBA playoff basketball game when I lived in Louisiana. I got to watch the Hornets when they were in the Eastern Conference go against AI in the Philadelphia 76ers. And AI took the it was a time that AI cooked us for 30-plus, and it was fun to watch, even though I was cheering for New Orleans. But it's an experience that I think that everyone should be a part of at one time. And it's fun when your team is winning. We didn't like what happened on Friday. It's fun when your team is winning. It's fun when your team's having success. This is just the beginning in Atlanta. Like and I'm sure me and Alan, we're going to have a lot of conversations on this program throughout the summer. That this is just the beginning. We've exceeded expectations. We have absolutely nothing to lose. And that's how we should go out game five. We have nothing to lose. We have nothing to prove. This is just a baseline. We're establishing a baseline for where do we go from here after this. And so that's the thing that excites me. And that's what should excite this team. And I'm really excited to see how they're going to come out and respond game five. All right, we already know Philly's going to come out energized. You know, they're going to throw their punches. We already know what Philly's going to come out like. We got to match their energy and surpass their energy. And I just wanted to ask before, I know, I think Alan has some wings coming into the house soon.
They are in route.
They are in route. So before we wrap up the program, any other things as far as game five you want to see from the Hawks or foreshadowing for this matchup tomorrow night?
Like I said at the top, Nate McMillan kind of played his – there's some cards as far as adjustments are concerned that he can still play, but he's pulled the big ones. Kevin Huerter is now a starter, and the bench unit has been cut down to really just two guys and a little bit of a Kongwu. One thing that would be interesting to see a little bit more of, though, is these lineups where you have Trey, Bogey, Gallo, Collins, and Capella on the floor. It's a lineup that we've seldomly used throughout the season, mostly because, you know, Gallinari becomes kind of a liability against a lot of wings in that position. But the results of that lineup and the limited amount of playing time that they've played together so far in this postseason against this Sixers team have been pretty encouraging. Talk about matchup issues right there with the combination of size and shooting that you have with those lineups. Philly's not really equipped to guard all of our guys like that. And I don't have the numbers in front of me. I saw who posted on Twitter. So I think that they have an overall net rating in their 10-minute sample size of plus 44. I mean, not in that span. Like this is a it's an interesting lineup, and it is another area that the coaching staff could lean a little more on if you want to make an adjustment. But really, I mean, I like what we've seen so far. I think that the Hawks have come up with a good counterpunch to what Philly had thrown at them in those first three games, even though this was a close win, and a lot of it, you know, had Embiid been able to hit a few more shots, we might be talking a little bit differently. But what I saw in that game was a game plan that actually could work if guys continue to buy into their roles, continue to communicate on defense.
Yes.
And that's huge. That was a huge reason why we cut off those driving lanes, is because guys were communicating with each other. Everyone was in the right positions. The Hawks should not be afraid anymore of this Philly team. They have proven it to themselves that they can hang. As bad as it looked heading into game four, they now know that they have the ability to beat these guys, and they can do it in Philadelphia too. So I just kind of, I want to see confidence. I want to see communication. And I really, I mean this, I really want to see another Okongwu poster. That'd be pretty fun too.
Yeah, I just want to see, as I said before, just the same fight that you had the second half of game four, bring it and surpass it in game five, because it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough sledding. We know that Philly crowd is it's always a great crowd. It's a great sports crowd. It's a great sports town, especially when their teams are having success. So just, you know, be ready for whatever. Believe in yourself. Believe in Atlanta. Believe. Yeah, believe in yourselves. Go out there.
You see it on the shirts.
Yeah, you see it on the shirts, even though the bootleg shirt that had Tristan Thompson on there, that was if you missed that, guys, go on my Twitter feed. I did retweet it. Someone did a Believe in the Hawks shirt, and they had pictures of, you know, John Collins, Capella, had everybody on the roster, but also had a picture of Tristan Thompson in an Atlanta Hawks jersey. So I don't know.
What's...
I don't know. Whoever's selling that outside of State Farm Arena needs to be arrested.
That's just so confusing. Why?
we don't want Tristan Thompson.
Nah, we're good. I mean, like, yeah, fine. I player. Mean,
we can find a role for him on our team, but we don't want him.
He's a good rebounder. You know, he's okay. Don't take. I've been so pro Okongwu on this podcast right now. I'd be inconsolable if Tristan Thompson just walked up in here and just took what little minutes he has left. Yeah, whoever you are, what are you doing?
Yeah.
What's going on?
Yeah. Tristan, you know, his team is out of it. He's hanging out with Khloe Kardashian and his daughter. So, you know, he has, you know, bigger things that he needs to focus on attention on outside of just staying faithful.
There it is.
But Alan... It was a pleasure as always have you on the program. It was great to, you know, talk up a great win last night. It may not have been great when you look at the numbers, but it was great in so many other ways.
It was great.
Yeah, symbolic and meaning and, you know, just, you know, character wise for this team. So I can't thank you enough for coming on the program. Tell the listeners what you got going on outside of, you know, these wings that are en route.
The wings are getting closer. So very excited over here. Thanks for having me on as always, Brad. Love talking Hawks with you. Love talking, you know, to y'all. I hope you guys are as excited and fired up as I am about where we are right now. And just as a franchise, this is just such a cool moment to just continue to take in. Just being among this last class of teams to contend for a title. And the Hawks are legitimately contending for one right now. So let's see, you know, game five, all hands on deck. I am ready. You guys can, if you want, you know, hear more from me. I'm not tweeting all that much these days, but you can follow me on Twitter at Alan Srochi, AlanSrochi. I will, you know, I have some stuff in the pipeline, but maybe I'll talk about it a little bit more once we have some stuff worked out whenever I come on the show again. But, you know, y'all fantasy basketball enthusiasts, just keep your eye out over the offseason. I might have something cooking for y'all.
Put some respect on my man's name and put some respect on his wings. I hope the restaurant that you ordered from, they did. And if not, we're going to call you out next episode. We're going to call
they
you out.
They do good work. They do good work. I feel confident in these guys.
Okay. Just in case I wanted to have to say any things. And I love some wings. Like I said, I had some before here. The wings fried rice combo 10-piece. Love those wings. And if you love what you heard today, give us 5 stars. Give us a good review. Share it to everybody. It's playoff season, baby. It's playoff season, baby. Hawks fans, Atlanta sports fans, NBA basketball fans, ceiling fans. If you a fan in general, you need to listen to this podcast. You share it with everybody. Follow us at Hoop Ball Hawks on Twitter. That is at Hoop Ball Hawks on Twitter. Follow myself, Brad Jarrett 67. That is Brad Jarrett 67. As we said, game five is tomorrow night, Wednesday, June 16th, 7:30 on TNT. Right now, Philadelphia is a 6-point favorite at home. But, you know, we find being the underdogs here in Atlanta. It's okay. Count us out. Atlanta versus everybody. Atlanta versus Philly. Can't wait for game five. We got a game six back here in Atlanta. Great time. Eat some wings. Enjoy the rest of your day. And let's go, Hawks. Shit!